principles before personalities.
Tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Lisa.
Hey everybody, my name's Lisa and I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since August 18th, 2008. I have a sponsor, her name is Mika. She knows she's my sponsor because I call her every day, almost. And I send her a 10 step every night. And when I'm nervous about things like this and I'm taking myself a little too seriously, I call her and she talks me through that. She has a sponsor and I know who that person is as well. And I have a home group, and I do service there. I do service below the group level as well. And I try to practice these steps in all my affairs. I'm currently working a 9-step actively with a pen and paper and a phone and face-to-face contact, and trying to practice 10, 11, and 12 every day. So I just wanted to get all those stats out there. It's anniversary night, so welcome to all the people that are here to support a celebrant that either are or aren't alcoholic. That's really great that you're here, and congratulations to everyone who's going to get up here later. Your 60 seconds are way more important than my 25 minutes, for sure. And I had the pleasure of doing that last month. It was my 11, so if you ever played bingo, that's the sexy legs of bingo, right? I had the sexy legs of sobriety last month. And being in double digits, it's an interesting place to be. 10 was a really big year for me, and I'll get to why. But 11 was just like, okay, like these days are really starting to add up. If I look at that app, it's like numbers that are big, and I feel like maybe things should be a different way some days than they are, or I should be looking at life in a different way than I am, or not looking at other people the way I do sometimes, even if the words don't come out of my mouth. Like the thoughts, I wish the thoughts didn't even come to my head, but my sponsor reminds me that I'm human and I'm doing the best I can and I'm doing better than I was 11 years ago for sure. So I want to tell you a little bit about what it was like and how I got here. I'm the oldest of four kids. I grew up in South Jersey outside of Philly. That's where I'm from. I'm a suburbs chick, right? So my mom was a school teacher, and there was expectations around that. Like, everyone was expected to go to school and get good grades and behave and go on to college, and it was just like there was kind of like this plan that was already laid out, and like I didn't really feel like I had that many choices in it, and I wasn't uncomfortable with that. I didn't even really realize that I didn't have those choices until way later. I feel like my high school career was kind of average. I went to a pretty big high school, and I was kind of in the middle of the road. Like, I played a few sports. I had a group of friends. I did student council. Like, I was just kind of like this average person, and I had a lot of friends, but like only a very small group of close friends. And I had what I think is like normal teenage anxiety stuff, right? Like, where do I fit in? Are my clothes cool enough? I remember my mom used to make us pick out our clothes the night before and like approve what we were gonna wear the next day. And I like remember I used to change on the bus sometimes. And I remember at my high school reunion, some guy was like, remember when you used to change on the bus? And I was like, oh God, I can't even believe you remember that, right? Like, I didn't think anybody was paying attention, right? So I guess I was worried about what other people think, but I never thought anything of it. And I started drinking in high school, and it seemed pretty innocent. Like, it was just something we did here and there, like an experiment, like somebody's older brothers and sisters would get us liquor and we would go in the woods. That's what you did in the suburbs, right? Like, we didn't have Studio 54. So like we went in the woods and we had like a party, and like I didn't get in any kind of trouble. I always got good grades, and like things kind of came easy to me. And, you know, I've kind of learned over time that, you know, maybe it would have been better if it was a little harder, because I mean, I would have worked a little differently. And so my work ethic took time to build up. But things came easy for me, and then I went off to college like I was expected to do, but of course I didn't do it like they wanted, right? I got a job in a bar, and I went to community college instead of the university because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I turned down scholarships and other academic accolades because I was just like a little bit lost. But again, like I really didn't think anything of it at the time, you know? Like I just thought that this is just normal, like growing up stuff. I hear people say, like, I felt uncomfortable in my own skin and I took my first drink and everything was okay. That's like not my experience. My first drink, my first 10,000 drinks were not like white light experiences, you know? I didn't know about alcoholism. I didn't have an example of that in my house. Or in my close family or friends. I thought that an alcoholic was somebody drinking out of a brown paper bag on a park bench that I would see like when I would go into Philly, because that was like going into the city for me. And like, you know, I didn't know that like an alcoholic could look like this, you know. I didn't exactly look like this when I got here. But, but like, you know, I didn't know. Like, I just didn't know. Like, it's not like these words weren't in my vocabulary. I just didn't know it was a disease and that it was progressive. So the way I look at it today, like 48 years later, is that I was born with it, you know? And it's not anybody's fault that I got it, but I was born with it. And I fed it what it likes, which is alcohol. And eventually, it just got stronger than me. And then I needed help, and I didn't know I needed it. You know, I didn't even really know how to ask for help for anything. I was like brought up to be like this, you know, I'm every woman, you know, and like, so I wasn't asking anyone for help, certainly not a man and not another woman, right? But I started getting in trouble and things started getting bad. Like I got a bunch of DUIs. And then drinking and driving was the problem, not drinking, you know, just the two of them together. And again, like, I'm not a stupid person. Like, I knew that that was wrong, that was illegal, that was risky behavior. But I did it anyway because when I put the first drink in, all bets are off. But I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know. I had lost the power of control and choice, and I didn't know I lost it. I don't even know like when that happened, but I have a little idea. So I got my second DUI, and I lost my license for 2 years. And since drinking and driving was the problem, right? And like, by the way, guys, this is like way before Uber and stuff, okay? And I'm in the suburbs, right? I'm not even in the city, right? There's no yellow taxis around Marlton, New Jersey. But so I lose my license, and I'm not going to be driving for 2 years. So I can just drink as much as I want, right? Like, I'm never going to be the DD. Like, I never have to worry about drinking and driving for 2 years. And so I just drink my face off because drinking and driving is the problem, not drinking. And, like, somewhere in there, I'm pretty sure I crossed that invisible line that it talks about in the big book. And, you know, I didn't even know I crossed it. So I get my license back, and like I have like this great plan. Everything's going to be good, right? I'm not gonna drink and drive because that's bad, and I got me in trouble. And I know what the consequences are going to be for number three. I know what they're going to be because they told me that in DD school. But I lost the choice. I didn't have the choice anymore. So I would go out with the great. I never sat at my desk at work, right, and was like, I'm going to go out tonight, going to get wasted, and I'm going to drive my car home. That's a great plan, right? Like, that was never my plan, not one time. But it happened dozens easily, if not hundreds of times. And I don't say that, like, to be proud. And if you're, like, here with an anniversary celebrant and, like, that makes you want to, like, it makes me feel that way, too, right? Like, I can't believe I did that stuff. I can't believe, like, I'm standing up here telling you that, like, somewhat calmly, right? Like, that's super dangerous, and, like, I could have died. I could have killed someone else. Like, something really bad could have happened, and how that didn't happen, I mean, I know today is because something bigger than me was looking out for me and has a bigger plan for me that wasn't being wrapped around a tree, but believe me, there was nothing spiritual about it at the time. And, you know, I started waking up in places that, like, I guess that, you know, I don't want to get into details, but, like, the best way I can describe it is that, like, the morning would come and my eyes would be shut and I'd be scared to open them. You know, like, where am I going to be? Is there going to be anybody next to me? Where's my car? How did I get here? What day is it? Am I late for work? Like, these are the thoughts, and I haven't even opened my eyes yet, right? I mean, one day I woke up and I went in the bathroom to do what you do in the bathroom, and I looked in the mirror and there was, like, a bush, like, and, like, also if people laugh at these crazy things I say, like, and you don't know why they're laughing, it's because they probably have a crazy story like this too. And it wasn't funny that day, believe me. And I have a black eye, and my face is all, like, scraped up, and it's a work day, and I have no idea how this happened, right? And I have to call my friend and be like, what happened? And she's like, you don't remember? And I was like, well, clearly no, or I wouldn't be calling you. And she's like, you couldn't get the key in the door, and my boyfriend got out of the car to try to help you, and you fell into that big bush next to the door. And I was like, oh, so close, I almost made it in. You know, and, like, but that's what my life was like at the end. And within less than a year from when I got my license back for my second DUI, I got my third by the same cop in almost the same spot. And it wasn't like some glamorous night out on the town. It was like Friday afternoon after a liquid lunch. And, like, everybody's out with their kids, like, at the park, like, playing soccer or whatever normal people in their mid-30s do on Friday afternoons. And I'm getting a DUI on the side of the road. And I'm basically saying to the cop, like, can we just take this inside the police station? Because it was, like, kind of right there. And because, like, someone might see me, you know. Please. So, you know, so I get this third DUI and I go to jail, right? And I don't go to jail like overnight in the drunk tank. I go to jail for 180 days, right? I didn't even know anyone who ever went to jail. Like, I didn't have a friend of a friend who went to jail, right? And I'm going to jail. And I'm doing a 180-day stint, right? Like, and, you know, all I can say about that is, like, it's not, I'm here representing sobriety tonight, not the corrections facility, but I can see where doing time comes from, because it is boring, and it is watching the clock tick away until your sentence is over. And I lost my license for 10 years. And again, I'm in the suburbs. There's no Uber or yellow taxis, right? And I'm basically spending as much money as I'm making, luckily having a job, by the way, to get to and from work and to, you know, just I'm basically breaking even at the end of the month. And so, you know, what happened was that part of my sentence, I got to finish in a rehab, and that's where I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous. And, well, that's not 100% true. I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings before, because the other DUIs, they, like, make you go to the meeting to get your card signed, right? So I knew what Alcoholics Anonymous was, but I didn't know about sobriety. I didn't know about recovery. I mean, I heard terms like sponsors and steps and traditions and service and meanings, but I didn't do any of those things, right? And so I drank, because I wasn't one of those people. I was better than that. And it was only drinking and driving that was the problem. I wasn't an alcoholic. But in rehab, I learned about the disease. And, like, I'm not sure why I heard it that time. I'm not sure why I believed it. I did hear hope from the people that brought meetings there, and like they told stories about like doing things that I like to do without drinking, like going to sporting events or concerts. And I was like, wow, you do that stuff without like tailgating out the back of your Benz? Because that's what I was doing because I was so cool, you know, like, and then sleeping by halftime on Monday at a Monday night football game, you know, and not remembering anything, you know. Like they came in and told those stories, and I was like, so I can have a life. And you know, they said, when you go home, go to a meeting, put your hand up, tell them you just got home from jail and rehab and you need help. And it was Valentine's Day 2009. It's kind of my second sobriety date, because I feel like that's the day when I started to have a choice about being sober, because I spent the first 180 days locked up. And I went to a meeting with my friend while her husband waited in the car for the full hour, because it was Valentine's Day. And she went in with me, and I did that. I put my hand up and said that, and then I went out to dinner with them for Valentine's Day. And I don't know, like, I went back. You know, like a couple days later, I went back. I used to make my secretary drive me to the lunchtime meetings, like it was part of her job or something. So ridiculous. So much ego. And my first sponsor says that I used to sit at the meetings like dressed up for work, and I would be in my chair like, right? And like, I don't know. I don't know what made me ask her to be my sponsor. I feel like she just kept raising her hand. I was like, this chick must really need a sponsor, you know? And they said, get a sponsor, get a home group, get a service commitment. So I guess I better start checking these things off the list. And like, I didn't come here to get sober and stay sober for the rest of my life. I came here to get the heat off. Like, I still had some people in my life, friends and family, thank God, after all that, that came to visit me in jail every Sunday. And they were like, look, Lise, we don't know what the deal is, but you can't drink anymore, you know? Like, forget this driving, for no driving for 10 years. You just can't drink. And, like, so it was really, like, just to keep the heat off, you know? Like, no, on the back end, there was no court that said I had to come here. There was nothing like that. I was released. I did my time. But I just kept coming, and eventually I started working the steps, and like things started to change, and I made friends, you know, I made friends in sobriety. My job like took off, and you know, things just started to happen. And none of that was promised to me, by the way, by Alcoholics Anonymous, right? It was promised to me that I'll never have to feel the way I did again before I went to jail again. I'll never have to look my dad in the eyes in handcuffs and say goodbye when his daughter's going off to jail. I'll never have to wake up in the morning and keep my eyes shut for 5 minutes while I try to figure out if I want to open them or not. I don't ever have to feel like that again. That was promised to me here, right? It wasn't promised to me, and I thought it was, right? Like, I thought it was promised I was going to get a husband, have a couple kids, a white picket fence, and 11 years later, it wasn't not going to look like New York City. Like, I don't even know what I'm doing, right, half the time. But that's not what happened. That wasn't God's plan for me. And I'm not sure why, but I know that the life that I live today is more than I could have ever thought of. Like, I would have never been able to move to a city. So first of all, I didn't have my license for 6.5, 7 years. I had tried to get it back, and they were like, yeah, sorry about your luck. And then I moved to the city, and it's like a non-thing, right? Like, I don't even need it anymore. But, like, I would never have been able to appreciate that if I had had the opportunity to come here sooner. And I would never have had the opportunity to get promoted and move to New York if I hadn't been doing all the hard work I was doing for the 7 years before that. So I know why I didn't get my license back when I asked for it. Right? It wasn't because I was being punished for being sober or the judge didn't like me or whatever. It wasn't the right time. I need to learn things slowly. I'm like of this educational variety, right? You know? And so the gifts have come slowly, and I've realized them in retrospect. Like, I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, that's why I went through that, right? I get to be like the best aunt ever. Like, my youngest brother is 14 years younger than me, and he has a little baby. They're both doctors. They need a lot of help. And like, I get to go there like pretty much every other weekend. It's like the best of all worlds, right? Like, I get to be like super aunt, and then I get to go home and be super single Lisa, right? Like, you know? And like, So I get to get my baby fixed, right? I don't have to, and I watch them, like, you know, if you're ever worried about being single, newcomers, by the way, if you're worried about being single, just call up your married friends, right? And ask them how, like, you know, how their husband made them feel today, or their wife, or their other significant other, right? And then they say, like, oh, that jerk today, you know, then I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm single. So I don't have to, like, worry about all that. Like, I have other stuff to worry about. That's not the plan for me right now. But I know I can date. I've dated. I've had relationships in sobriety, you know, and they've been good relationships, and I've been able to leave those on, you know, on good terms, you know, and, like, have honest conversations. I don't take hostages anymore, you know. I took a lot of hostages when I was out there. You know, I know, like, when my paycheck comes, I know which bills I have to pay. You know, it doesn't promise me that there's going to be a lot of money left over at the end of the day, but, like, I can pay my bills today, and I can live a nice life, you know? And that's just a gift of coming here and showing up. You know, I get to sponsor other women. That is such a privilege, right? Like, to work with other people and bring them through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And to, like, have the gifts of the experience of someone doing that for me. My first sponsor was a military wife. She moved every 3 years in sobriety, right? And I had no idea what that meant for me. But 7 years in, when I was moving to New York and I was going to be the new girl, but not counting days, she knew exactly what that was going to feel like. She said, it's going to take a year. She said, you're going to have to do everything you did at the beginning. You're going to have to get back to basics. You're going to have to get a service commitment. They're not going to give you the money, right? You're going to have to sweep cigarette butts again, you know? Like, that's what you're going to have to do. And I did all of that. I took all of that advice, and I made friends doing that, you know? That's how people got to know me, and that's how I got to know them. So, you know, that's what I feel like, if for nothing else besides the first taking me through the steps for the first time, that's why she was still there 7 years later, just for that. And then the time came when I had to have the conversation with her that it's, like, time for me to move on. I need somebody that I can see on a more regular basis in person, and we've outgrown each other. And that's okay. That's okay, because we're both mature people in a honest relationship, and we can break up amicably, and we can still be friends, and I can still call her and run things by her, you know. You know, I just want to end with some gratitude. Gratitude has been a huge part of my growth in this program. There, around 6 or 7 years, I was, like, in a bad spot, and my sponsor was like, you know, I really didn't want to drink because I know what it means to drink. Like, I know that if I pick up a drink, that's why I keep coming to meetings, by the way, so you guys can remind me, right? Like, that's what it's going to look like if I drink again. I can paint the whole picture. It's not going to be a martini with olives, like, oh, fancy, right, at the hotel bar. It's going to be a hot mess. I'm going to be passed out, and the bartender's going to be trying to figure out who I am from the top of my head, right? And because that's what it looked like for me. But I thought that things would look different at 6 or 7 years, and she's like, that's because you're concentrating on what you think you don't have instead of what you do have. And I started doing a daily gratitude list, putting 5 to 10 things a day for that day that I was grateful for. And that started out pretty basic, like, I'm glad I'm sober, I'm glad I have a job, you know, like, and those are all great things, right? But it got deeper, and I started to dig deeper into it, and it became part of my 10th step. And it got, like, you know, I'm glad that I got yelled at by that client on the phone today because it taught me to pause and patience and, like, all these things, and it helped me realize, like, how this program really is working in my life every day and how grateful I am to be sober, because nothing would be what it looks like today if I wasn't. And with that, I just want to say thanks again to everyone here. I look out here and it's, like, a lot of faces, and that makes me nervous at first, but, like, I also can, like, go in almost any row, and, like, we might not be going out for dinner, but, like, I know your face and I know your name, and a lot of you, I think, know mine, and, like, if you don't, it's okay. I'm not that important, but, like, you do now anyway, but, like, but... But the point is, you know, I come here, I get plugged in, and then it's okay. Like, everything's just okay. And I'm okay with okay today. It doesn't have to be here, and it doesn't have to be here, like, poor me. It's just okay. And for that, I'm very grateful. Thank you.